everybody. You having a good day? Okay, hey, let's get going. My name's Martin Woodward. martinwoo@microsoft.com if you want to send me email. @MartinWoodward if you want to send me abuse on Twitter, and you will do by the end of this one, I'm sure. And then visualstudio.com is what I work on. So, as you can tell from my accent, I'm a local guy. I'm going to try and slow down because, we're going to have captioning, and my English accent doesn't work well with captioning, so we'll see how it goes. Right. So, I'm a local guy. I actually live remotely in Northern Ireland, and just outside of Belfast. So, I work remote. I'm one of these remote workers that there are in Microsoft. So that's the view from my office. It's pretty awesome. So that's what, you know, it's good. It rains all the time in Northern Ireland. It's like, a bit like Seattle, really. So in fact, I think I'm the only person that comes to Seattle and comments how nice the weather is. So that's how much it rains. But we get lots of cool rainbows and green grass. That's where I work. Microsoft do give me an office, but I never ever work there. Because, there's a picture of my office. It's in an industrial wasteland. And I don't know if you can see, there's sort of, I don't know, let's see if they let me. Here we go. So I that's where I work there, that little, like, jaggedy building. Has anybody watched Game of Thrones? Watched Game of Thrones? There we go. That's where Game of Thrones is filmed, believe it or not, in this industrial wasteland in Belfast. And then that's the Titanic Museum. And then don't let this worry you, but where this presentation was written, that big hole in the ground there, that's where the Titanic was built. So, hopefully this will go okay. It was fine when we last touched it, is what we like to say anyway, or it works on my machine is another one. So, right then. So let's get cracking. I work on the Visual Studio team. I work on Visual Studio team services and a bunch of things like that. Most of my team are in Seattle here, so just up the road in Building 18. And then we also have some people, a large portion of the team live in North Carolina. And then I'm on the community side, so on my team, we've got India as well, sorry, how can I forget them? A lot of the work from that we're going to see today came out of our Hyderabad office as well. And then I have a team, and in my team we've got people all over, so in the UK and all over Europe, so it's good. Right, I don't know if you've noticed, sort of over the past month and a bit, we've been talking about spring into DevOps. Okay, we've been wanting to get people to automate deployments. So let's do a quick survey. Who here already has continuous deployment set up? Oh my God! Right. Well, let's say for the people listening on video, that's like 4 or 5 people, was it? That's about 50% of the audience. Okay. Well, you're probably going to know a lot of this, but we'll see how we get on. And then. Also, who has continuous integration? Let's see, who has builds automated? Wow, that's interesting. That's about the same. So who doesn't have continuous integration set up then? Let's do those hands. Yeah, that's funny. That's not like half the audience. Yeah, that's bizarre. And then who uses version control? Anyone? Yeah, there we go. Right. Thank you. By the way, zip fold, despite what the Stack Overflow survey says, doing zip folders and copying over the network shares isn't version control, okay? Right. So we've been wanting to just try and encourage everybody to get into continuous deployment. In people's maturity with DevOps, actually being able to automate your deployments is kind of the next step, really, that a lot of people have yet to take because they're a bit scared of it. And so today we're going to try and take away some of that fear, and we'll see, depending on how the demos go. Some of the things I'm showing you were ready this morning, about 5 o'clock this morning. So it's all fairly hot off the press, so we'll see how it goes. And then we also had there was some identity issues earlier on today as well, so it should be fun. The point is, it's fairly easy to get set up. Once you've got it set up, it works, and you don't need to do it again. And the only way you get good at something is to do it a lot, is to practice. And we all know from doing the continuous integration stuff, it used to be that there was only like one guy on the team or one person on the team that could actually figure out how to build the stuff. And quite often I still go into companies today where people don't dare do a production deployment unless, you know, Jill or Jack or somebody is there in the office, because they're the people that know how to do deployments. I've fallen into this trap myself. I don't know if anybody follows different open source projects. There's been a few projects I've done where we haven't got the deployment fully automated, and it just makes it harder. And open source projects are where you need things to be as easy as possible, because you know, you're grabbing a bit of time at the weekends and things, and you know, you figure out how to deploy something, and the next time you come and do a release, you've forgotten how to do it. So continuous deployment's really, really important, basically. So we're gonna try and show you how to do it. So what's continuous delivery, continuous deployment? Basically, if we go along, you know, you've got a source control system. You know, VSTS is an excellent source control system, but obviously other source control systems are available. GitHub, whatever, GitLab, you know, Bitbucket, or just a standard Git server under your desk somewhere. And then we do build, and we test our builds, don't we? And then we package, and then we deploy to separate environments. Some programs call these stages, some call them environments, whatever you want, but we think of them as environments. And then we can have steps for when we decide we want to push them onto the next environment. The one that people often have is pushing into, say, a dev test environment, you know, a local developer environment or a QA environment, UAT. That's the easiest thing to get set up initially. But then if you can also automate how you go from dev to UAT or dev to QA and then from QA to production, make sure it's repeatable, make sure it's scripted, make sure everything, like setting up your environments, is scripted, you know, make sure it's all there and all written down. And again, the only way you know is to test it and do it often and repeat. So obviously when you move build and test together, you get CI. This was just an excuse to do some fancy animations. And then when you're doing CI with Azure, there's a bunch of different options, again, that all work great. So I'm on the TFS and VSTS teams, so that's an option. TeamCity is great as well. I've used TeamCity before, a lot of people use that. Jenkins, I used to be on the .NET team, and Jenkins is something that the .NET team use for their open source projects, just because it gives an open source build report. But you use it for most of them. They actually use VSTS for some of them as well, for the .NET CLI and a couple. And then Atvey is awesome as well. It's great for doing open source projects. Love it. It's very simple to get set up. And obviously Travis CI is pretty cool. Atvey is probably, you know, a lot more common in the .NET area than, say, Travis, probably. But, yeah, anyway. Anyone who's done, say, Jenkins stuff when they've got a busy build server environment knows that you end up creating a lot of VM agents. I know this particularly because I used to pay the bill for the .NET team. And it was quite frightening when it used to come in every month. Despite what you might think, Microsoft doesn't get its Azure resources for free, so somebody has to pay for them. And so I saw that come in. And it is painful. I just took a quick screenshot the other week of what it looks like, the portal. So you notice when you go to .NET Core and you look at the core setup, you see all the different build definitions, all the different targets, and there's a matrix, you know, of the different branches and of the different environments, and each one of those needs machines. Usually it needs multiple machines because you want to validate pull requests before they get, you know, before they can be merged. And if you're validating a pull request, so you can tell if it's going to get merged or not, then you need lots of build servers to help you validate all these things before you even press the merge button. So it's hideous. And there's like, I think it's about, currently there's about just over 100 Jenkins agents in the .NET open source, you know, cluster build farm. So yeah, it's a management exercise in itself. Now, thankfully, one of the things that's been released just recently that I wanted to bring your attention to, because I didn't know it was out until very recently too. There's now an Azure VM plugin into Jenkins. So if you want to, as part of your your build process in Jenkins, if you want to come along and use an Azure ARM template to instantiate your machines or whatever, it's very, very simple. And you can just do that, and it'll, you know, fire up all the, build up the machines, do the build, and then help you tear them down. So, yay. I probably should get that done for the .NET guys. And it's, you know, it's fairly quick. And the best thing about that is you're only paying for what you use. Often it's not the actual, it's not the price of the, you know, it's not the machine time that's the expensive bit. It's when people leave those VMs switched on overnight or leave them on over the weekend just in case, you know, that's when they get expensive. So you can fire up a big cluster, use them, bring them back down again. And that's what the cloud's great for. So take advantage of it. Okay. So again, ready for this transition? This is exciting, really. I spent far too much time on this. All right, woo, look at that. Man. Okay. So when you're doing, these are, you know, rough stages during a continuous delivery pipeline. Your source control that you're doing that, if you say we're doing, going to do Octopus deploy. Octopus deploy, cool way of deploying to different areas. It's good because you can combine cloud and on-prem as well, which is quite cool. And the way that you do that is basically have a source control system. In this instance, let's just say GitHub, for example. And then Jenkins is a build agent, though, again, other build agents are available. You have a package step. Typically, you take your build that you've built and tested, and then you package it up. And Octopus Deploy has Octopack, which is a cool thing to only package the things that you need. And then you push that through the pipeline out to the machines, and then it installs either into the cloud, in this case as an Azure web app, which Octopus Deploy can do, or onto machines and do other things. But that's typically what a life cycle looks like over there. Another example that we have is if you're going to do, if you want to use the Azure Container Service, it's really awesome. If you're playing with containers, it's worth looking at because you can use all the tools, you know, like Kubernetes or Docker Swarm or whatever, to publish out into Azure Container Service. And in this example, you know, using a generic Git solution, whatever it is, it might Bitbucket maybe, whatever, or VSTS, deploying that out, package it up into a Docker file, and then you say something like Spinnaker. Again, an open source tool to then, you know, deploy out using Kubernetes into Azure Container Service. So the point I'm trying to make is that Azure just wants you to deploy applications to it. So they're going to make it as easy as possible for you to get your application and get it into Azure. And they're working with lots of different open source projects, lots of different application types to try and make it really easy for people to continuously deploy their applications into Azure. And do one more. So, we're talking today about virtual machine scale sets. So, you know, if you want to build a cluster, I think Scott did about 1,000 in his demo, didn't he, in the keynote. If you want to build a cluster of machines, they're all identical. You just want to farm them up, get them, do something, and then tear them back down again. Well, to do that, to deploy to an Azure scale set, what you have to do is to create a VHD image, which then gets deployed out. And that might be a VHD image with Linux or with Windows, you know. And to do that, we actually work with the HashiCorp, who have a Packer, which is, again, open source. And it allows you to create a VHD image and then deploy that VHD image through whatever pipeline, Spinnaker, or even Visual Studio Team Services, and deploy those out into your VM scale set. And I'll show you that. Now, a little warning, just because of the team I'm on, we're going to show you some of these things. All the demos I'm going to be showing you will be focused around VSTS, just because we've got pretty graphics with it. But I'll be able to show you where you can plug in different open source components. And the other point I wanted to make, actually, is even if you're using, again, VSTS is just a continuous deployment. It's just the dev tools for Azure, really. That's how you can think about it. And it's a lot more open than it used to be because of that now. So if you want to plug in GitHub to the VSTS build system, perfect. If you want to plug in Subversion to the VSTS build system, perfect. If you want to use Octopus deploy with the VSTS build agent rather than their release management stuff. Great, it all works. There's tasks for all this sort of stuff. If you want to use Puppet and Chef and all that sort of stuff, it's all there. So you get flexibility and it's all composable and you can plug in. So as I say, VSTS is kind of continuous deployment built in. And in fact, if you're in the Azure portal and you do some continuous deployment stuff, which I'll show you, in the back end, it's using Visual Studio Team Services, though you hardly really realize. But why that's important, I'm not a fan of leaky abstractions. And things are great when you right-click and do the wizard thing, and it works. And then the minute you need to know why, I had a problem this morning where a build wasn't deploying. I'm like, what's going on? I'm sure I've pushed this. What's happening? Did I forget to, you know what always happens. You do git commit, and then you forget to do git push. I'm like, sat there. Did I forget to push? I'm pretty sure I did. But I needed to go and debug. I needed to go and find out where something was stuck. And because you know it's in VSTS, you can go in and, go and look into Visual Studio Team Services and actually see where it is in the process and really dig in. And then also, you can use the wizards to create a deployment for you and then use VSTS to actually customize it and modify it and make it scale it up, let it grow with you. As I say, it's a lot different from when it used to be. You know, Azure just want any app, any developer, any platform. They want to support your workloads and make it as easy as possible for you. We've been doing a lot of work to try and lower the barrier of entry for people because people are stuck when it comes to deploying. And then we also want to make sure that it's fine that we can support, like simple demo things, but we want to grow out to massive monster scale as well. And we use Visual Studio Team Services to deploy Visual Studio Team Services, which is all PaaS-based. It's, massive cloud architecture. Lots of data centers. It's multi-geo across the world, millions of users. So it's, it grows. And then, just cover some of the new announcements we've got that are coming out this week. Some of the things this morning. So this is awesome. Okay. So let's have a play. I'm bored of slides. First thing we're going to do is I'm just going to try and deploy like four different categories of app as quickly as I can, and we'll see how I get on. Because builds, nobody likes to sit and watch a build complete. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to kick off one type of build, kick off another and another. And then we're going to go back to the beginning, and we're going to see which ones have completed. So that we'll jump around a little bit, but hopefully you'll keep up with me. We'll see how it goes. And awesome, my machine's gone to sleep while I've been talking. This is fantastic. So before I'll just wake it up. Da da da. This is fantastic. Wait with me. Does help if you remember to plug the power supply in before you get started. So there we go. And you also get to witness the fantastic thing that is, if you got a Surface Book, everybody does this as well. Have you seen this? Hang on a second. Hello? There you go, it's trying to wake up. It's not actually got, the screen's not awake at the minute, it's decided to. Sorry, this isn't awesome to watch. Okay, first demo fail. There we go, right, I'm getting ready, you ready? I would sometimes would like to see a montage of all my faces while it's been trying to sign me in with facial recognition. Half the time, I think I'd be eating my lunch or something like that. Right. 7 again. Ooh, there we go. Magic. Okay, let's get started. So first of all, if you're using Visual Studio 2017, the latest update, you right-click on your, this is an ASP.NET, a classic ASP.NET application. You right-click, you've got this magic wizard here, configure continuous delivery, and you can just come in, and as long as it's in version control, you can come along here, and here's one I prepared earlier. So which repo is it in? Which branch do I want to deploy? And then it's even gone ahead and created me an app service name that's very memorable. I can go in and, do a proper one. So let's do build demo, MW build demo, there we go. 01, that'll do. Okay. And then there we go. So that's the first one kicked off. That was easy. So that's ASP.NET Classic. See, that's how easy it is to do continuous deployment with it, continuous delivery with it. So I'm next going to do .NET Core. And I was going to do this all from Linux, all from the command line. But then I noticed in the demos, people were showing Linux all the time and command line. I thought, there wasn't enough PowerShell in the keynote. So I'm going to do it from PowerShell just because, mostly because I can still type ls and it doesn't shout at me because I'm that kind of guy. So I'm just going to quickly create a new .NET Core application. Hope people can the people at the back see that okay? Do you want me to make it bigger? We're good? Right, great. .NET new, hang on, let's just check something. Okay, yeah. .NET new web. We're just going to create a very basic .NET core application, you know, just a hello world thing. And then if we just initialize it as a Git repository, so Git init, what I am going to do actually is, this shouldn't be necessary, but I had a problem earlier on, and so I don't know why, but I'm going to create an empty web config just because it seemed to help earlier. Now I'll find out. There we go. Again, this was a build I pulled off the this is, I'm running the very latest CI check-in build of the Azure command line here. So yeah, woohoo! Let's hold on. So git status, git add star dot star, git commit minus m, initial commit. And then what I want to do is push it to a Git repository. So again, I'm just going to jump over. Let's pick. Let's pick that one. A repository not found. Let's create that repository then. Okay. So this is the new look Visual Studio Team Services. So yeah, let's just quickly create a repository. .NET Core. Now you notice, I'll show you that in a sec. So I'm just going to quickly come in here. Da, 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 da. So git remote add origin blah. There we go. Cool. Git push. There you go. So command line rules, doesn't it? There we go. So if I go over here onto the web and hit refresh, you'll be able to see that's actually in my repository now. Now, I could cheat and click the setup build, but let's do something else. Let's do it from the command line because we're hardcore. Now the advantage of the command line is you've got things are working already. This is exciting. It's AZ, and if you want to know what to do, just do AZ help or AZH, and you can kind of do that the whole way down. So AZ web app deployment source, and again I can never remember what to do there, which is why I've written the cheat sheet down here. But you know, if you want to try and figure it out. So I'm going to configure a new one. I'm going to call it MW app. I'm going to stick it in my resource, just my resource group. And then I'll copy paste that that same Git repository in there. And then finally, I'm going to tell it, this is the magic parameters. See the app type of ASP.NET Core, and I'm going to do CD provider VSTS. If you don't do CD provider VSTS, then it'll actually use Kudu to do a deployment, which is cool for, you know, just doing deployments, but just a quick test thing for dev. But then if you want to scale it up into multiple environments, it's not as flexible there. All these, I'll put my Twitter and stuff at the end. They'll all be in the build handouts and stuff. But if you just follow me on Twitch as well, once I've finished Booth Duty tonight, I'll tweet out links to all these materials as well. So don't worry about having to take screenshots of random command lines. Anyway, yeah, cool. Right. So that's ASP.NET Classic, ASP.NET Core. Next, I used to do a lot of Java. So let's do some Java because that's cool. So I'm going to show you some other little tricks here. So let's go look at this new option, import repository. Ooh, that's exciting. So I'm going to go over and I'm going to steal the standard Jetty Hello World application with Java. It's a lightweight Java container. It's the one thing that ASP.NET Core is chasing in performance. It's, you know, very, 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 very fast. It's just not quite as fast as Jetty yet, but they're nearly there. So, yeah, that's the only framework that is faster now. So let's come in here and we'll do that, hit import. But the disadvantage, of course, is you've got to write Java and do all your getters and setters and all that sort of stuff rather than fancy C#. So, hey, who wants this? And look at this. And this is a really great, this is a neat little thing. If you are using VSTS, if you want to do a fork of a GitHub repository, you can just come in here and import them and bring them in into your server, which is awesome. Really, really useful. And it brings down all the branches as well, not just master, whatever. It's dead handy. So there we go. So now I've got a Java application. And look, this is when I say we want to make it really easy for people to do continuous deployment, we're like really getting quite obnoxious about it. And we'll be doing soon. I think you are building a web application. Would you like to deploy it? Oh, we should do that for April Fool's. We've been banned from doing April Fool's Day jokes lately. But this is how it's a different world, you know. If I type Java in, I don't just get one option, I get multiple options nowadays, you know. And I'm going to do Java Azure Web App, hit apply. And I'm going to come in here and I'm going to say, and look, remember I said it's all supposed to be pluggable. It's the Azure Developer Services. So if I want to pick a GitHub repository, I can. Or if I want to talk to Subversion, I can. And if I just want to talk to any random Git repository, then I can. But let's talk to the same instance I'm in here. I'm going to talk to that Jetty application I was doing. So where am I? Jetty, and I get to build master. And then this is really neat as well. If people know Java, then this is neat. If you don't, you don't really care. But what the template does is it pulls in Maven, Ant, and Gradle, and disables the Ant and Gradle version, so you can just delete those if you don't. But they're different build systems in Java land. You know, it's a bit like MS Build and Fake or whatever. I don't, you know, Kate and all that sort of stuff. You know, so yeah, you've got different ways of doing things, and Java has different ways of doing things. So there we go. So I'm going to use the Maven POM because it's a default option, and I'm doing a demo, and it picks up some magic defaults for me. But I can click on here if I don't like the defaults. But again, this is in the built into the UI, published JUnit test results. I did a company that did that, and I got bought by Microsoft and it paid my house off. That was how hard it used to be. And nowadays, you just right click on a checkbox. It's awesome. And what code coverage tool you're using. You know, it's very, very deep, rich integration with different platforms, not just ASP.NET and ASP.NET Core. So now this is a bit that I don't like. This is hot off the press. I talked to the team this morning, and they are actually improving this part. But if I go, hello. Sorry, hang on a second. My UI seems to have, I'm just going to redo this. Weird. Right, let's try that again. So I'm going to come down here. Oh, no, that's fine. Right. This bit, the team are looking to improve this. So if you, when you come in, if you click on the Azure subscription, you come in and pick which Azure subscription you want to publish it to. Because I, you know, do demos and stuff, I've got a million Azure subscriptions. Most people just have one. And then you come in here and pick where you want to deploy it. And you can just come in and type or whatever. I want to deploy it to this web app I've already created and said it's Java. Now, the problem is, what I don't like right now, is right with the templates as a stand, when you come in here, you have to come along and then, you know, stop, start, and then come in here and pick it again. You know, you have to declare it three times. So what they're doing is, we'll talk a bit more about this later, they're doing a bunch of work around templating and parameterization, and this is going to be easier. So basically, you'd just be able to declare it in one space, and then it'll use it throughout. So we'll get there, but it's looking good. So that's it quickly. Stop the Java, stop Jetty, deploy it, start Jetty back up again. And then we'll do save and key. Okay. Hit key. So that's four different ways of kicking off continuous deployment, of doing continuous deployment to Azure. So let's now go back to builds and hopefully we'll start to see some green. Woohoo, thank goodness for that. So the first one we did was the ASP.NET, wasn't it? First one. So that's MW build, and you see that six succeeded. So if we go over to releases and look at the release tab, we'll see there's a release definition for MW build. This is the current UI I'm showing you here. in a minute, I'm going to show you the new UI that's coming out very, very soon, and we'll play with that. Again, hot off the press. This is build. You've got to use the latest bits. So, and you see it's already done a release to the environment. So I could go in and, you know, look at logs and things, but if I just, like, let's just do, what did I call it? MW build demo 01 or something like that. Oh, I can't, I'm going to have to copy paste. That'll do. Azure websites dot net. So let's see. And it'll do all the compilation stuff. But yeah, that's that one deployed, hopefully. Fingers crossed. What's loading? You can come in and you can have a look at, so if I look at the actual environments that it's deployed to, so what it did, it created a single environment, dev, development, and then all it's doing is deploying the Azure app service. So it's deploying the thing that I generated. If I go to triggers, where are we? If I come in here, dev, it was triggered by that build. It's deploying the thing that was, you know, it's triggered by the build, and it's deploying that out there, and it's succeeded to the dev environment. And if I click on logs, you can see all the different logs here, and you get nice log views and all that sort of stuff. Great. And if I go, oh, look, there we go. There it is. It's deployed. It all works. Yay. That's good. First one done. So that's ASP.NET. Let's do .NET Core. Let's see if that one actually works. Yep. So that's that was the result of my command line. You know, it was doing some stuff. So then if I go back over and I click on, let's go to builds. And we'll see the MW app was that .NET Core app I did, succeeded, awesome. And if you want to know what's happening here, you can drill into the build. You can go through and look at the logs and all this sort of stuff. So let's do that. So go through, you know, look at all the different stages, look at the log files, all this sort of stuff. So, and all it's doing is a .NET, you know, .NET restore, .NET build, .NET test. There were no unit tests because it was just a simple web thing. And then the .NET publish, and then actually pushing it up to Azure, and then tidy it up. Simple, super simple. And notice I haven't had to declare any build agents or anything here, because if I go and have a look at my build definition, by default, what it's doing is using the hosted build agent. So if I go to, it's using a hosted Visual Studio 2017 server. If I wanted, I could pick a different one. I could have it running on hosted Linux, or just, you know, or whatever. There's a bunch of different hosted servers, but you can also configure your own servers. Like the .NET team do, if you need to do some builds on the Mac as well as on different platforms, you can just configure agents on different platforms. You can combine cloud VMs and on-prem VMs and all this sort of stuff. Even if there's an ARM template for declaring an agent, and you just go in and run it, and, you know, so you can do it during VM creation, or you can script it. You should script everything. Yeah, it uses, you know, PowerShell and DSG, and you should be using ARM templates, and you should be using Puppet and Chef and all that sort of good stuff. Okay. Right. And then what's doing via build test point. And then if we go over to releases, again, we'll see there's the release definition it's done. Just super simple. And it's currently doing the release still. So we'll maybe come back to that one in a second. And then let's just finally just check if anything else is completed, or if it's, or if we'll have to come back in a minute and have a look. Builds. That's not good. Right, we'll come back to that. Right, great. So that's four different apps, four different releases, and, you know, it's just dead easy to do. So, but they're obviously super simple, you know, just basic, get something deployed. So let's get a bit more complicated. Five. Okay, before I do. So let me just recap some of the things we talked about. So new stuff that came out in build, there's a bunch of Azure portal enhancements. Oh, no, I missed one. Sorry. What am I doing? I missed the Azure portal enhancements. If I go to Azure here, let's go to the portal. So just going to the Azure portal quickly. I think you saw this one in... Did anyone go to the DevOps Foundational earlier on today? You might have seen this one then, so I think that's why I was... let's just quickly do it, though. So if I come in here, App Services... I'm just going to quickly create a web app. There we go. And create. And then give it MW build node, blah, 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 put it in, put it somewhere close to us, West US, create. Nobody makes any difference because Azure has more bandwidth than like the universe, I think, so. And then that's just deploying that, and then that'll come up. And then what we'll do quickly is, I want to show you, there's a new portal, there's a new tab in the, there we go. There's a new tab in the portal that's just been added today. It's in preview mode now. I think it's, well, it's just been added this week, I think. And so if you come in here, continuous delivery preview, and then you can configure continuous delivery from Azure. And again, you know, you can pick GitHub or whatever. You can pick lots of different options. You can say which project you want. You can say, sorry, which server instance you want, which project, which repository, and then which branch. Click OK. What do you want to do with it? I want it. It's a Node app. Perfect. Just use Gulp. Yeah, whatever. And then OK. So that's going to go away and configure and run a build for me. Super easy. Lots of different ways of doing it. Lots of different types of apps. Nobody's got any excuses. Right. What else did I forget to show you? This would be good. OK. Hopefully, you don't really care, but the experience of Kudu, because at the minute we've got kind of Kudu and the VSTS stuff and trying to unify it so people get advantages of both. Then built-in support into the Azure CLI, that's brand new. Right now you have to get the latest version of, you know, like the CI build, a very latest version of the Azure CLI. It's not as frightening as it sounds. There's Docker support, which I didn't really show. And then in the Visual Studio integration, you know, we showed in the demo in the keynote, right-click, create a Docker container, right-click, and then I did right-click, deploy. Well, that's doing it to a Windows container right now, and so there'll be Linux container support for that pretty soon. And then Visual Studio Code and IntelliJ integration. On the IntelliJ integration side, so at the minute we don't have the continuous deployment stuff built into IntelliJ. So that includes Project Rider and things. It's not the CD stuff isn't built in there, but the you still got TFEC support and VSTS support and stuff in IntelliJ. Okay. Right, this is new. Deployment groups. This is a new thing in VSTS for build. So if you have a deployment group, it's just gone into public preview. And what a deployment group is basically, it's just a group of tagged VMs. So you come in and you tag your VMs, and then you, if it's ASP.NET, then you tag, you know, you tag your web tiers web, and you tag your database tiers DB. And then when you come to do your release step, you say, hey, deploy your dev release step is deploy everything to the development deployment group that's an ASP.NET, you know, that's a web tier. Deploy the IIS stuff to that. Deploy to the database to all the machines that are a DB tier. And again, the deployment agent that sits on the machine is just the same build agent that VSTS uses that's open source. It's the same thing. And it runs everywhere. It's cross-platform. It's in an ARM task. You can mix and match on-prem and cloud VMs. You know, you can have it deploying to everything. So what you can do with deployment groups, there's lots of different things, and they're really, really cool. One of the things you can do with them is just use it to, you know, provide that layer of abstraction. So just deploy to some machines for me, which is fine. And you can then identify which machines it got deployed to, and you can track back what release is running on what actual VM or machine, and you know what build is it, why, all that sort of thing. So that's awesome. Another thing you can do though with the deployment groups, which is a bit more powerful, you can clone your release steps. You've got the dev and QA and production. They're a lot more similar now because you're deploying to the QA deployment group, and you're still just doing IIS, and you're still just doing database. The only thing that's different is how many machines are in those pools, which is quite handy. Often, you know, if you can have as many machines in pre-prod as you can in prod, then great. We like you. Scott Guthrie likes you because you pay for his business trips and things. But most of us can't afford that. Another thing you can do is actually dynamically provision using Puppet, Chef, ARM templates, whatever you want to do. You can dynamically provision your QA environment as part of the build. Or maybe you have a load test environment. So you can come in, dynamically provision 1,000, you know, front ends and some databases, connect them all together, and then run your test and tear it all down. And yeah, so it gives you this layer of abstraction, which is really quite neat. And we'll have a look around on them. Let me make sure I've just got all the things. It's the same cross-platform agent, as I said. That's the other thing with the deployment group. You can actually, the deployment group is where you define the security context. So you define who has the ability to deploy to that deployment group, you know, and the STS has good security built in and all that sort of stuff, so that's quite neat. One of the things that's handy with using deployment groups or Octopus Deploy or whatever you use for this type of thing, people don't have production access. You know, no, there are no scripts kicking around that have production access. It's the actual, the agent runs on the box, so people can't log into the live box. And the only way to get stuff onto that agent is by sending the message over, which is logged and audited, you know, and it's all, and there's trusts, you know, proper revocable trust set up between the agent and the server. And all that stuff's done magically, transparently for you, but you can still just deploy, and it's a lot more secure, it's a lot more audited, and it's, yeah, pretty neat. Another thing that's good about deployment groups. Like, I've been doing this since, like, when I used to have a real job at an airline, and I used to have to, like, build high transaction websites and all that sort of stuff, whereas now I just do demos. But, yeah. When I had a... And delete email is the other thing I do. When I had a real job, we used to do rolling deployments. So we would... And we would do this manually. So basically, you put your website, you upgrade your database first, or you do it second, depending on which way you like to go around. We did ours first. So we would upgrade our database to the new schema. Then we would deploy the web app to half of the app tier. And then this was to ensure availability. And then we make sure everything's good, and then we deploy it to the other half. And if there was issues, we would take machines offline and all that sort of thing. And it was great. Deployment groups, you just say, I want to deploy to a maximum of 10% of my pool wants to be deploying at any one time, and leave the rest of the machines alone. So you can configure that, and that allows you to do rolling deployments. And if it gets through the deployment and finds, say if you've said, I only want to deploy to half the pool at once, and if that starts to fail, then it can stop deploying and all those sorts of things. You know, you can configure what you want to do. We'll have a play. As I mentioned, there's an ARM task or agent install, and because of the ARM task, that's what allows you to script everything. Well, that's what allows you to automate a bunch of things. And because installing the agent is just like a single line, well, it's a big line, but a single bit of copy-pastable code, it's really easy to just integrate into whatever automation you use. So let's have a look at deployment groups. I'm going to show you the some new UI. So let's do that. So this is starting to get rolled out within the next couple of sprints. Some of this is already on production, but not behind a feature flag, and you know how that all works. But I'm going to actually jump onto an instance here with the latest bits running on it. And we're going to go to build and release. And first of all, what I'll do is I'll show you, we've got this environment set up. This is quite a simple environment to begin with. One of the things I want to show you here is, let's look at the UI. Ooh, shiny. It's like, you know, it looks pretty and everything. But this is a fairly simple one. The ones we did at first were really super simple. This is quite simple, but a bit more complicated. And then we're going to scale up. And you see, it's just all using the same tools and things. It just gets more and more. So this is the trigger that kicks it off. If you wanted, as well as a trigger, if you want to do scheduled releases, then you can. If you want to do nightly releases, that's easy, or weekly, whatever. But this is done by, this is triggered by that build definition, which I could show you, but I'll not bother. Oh, no, hang on, I clicked the wrong thing. Right. And then, sorry. So it's configured by the build. It's triggered by the build completing and publishing. And then we've got the UAT environment. And we've inside that UAT environment, and again, this is a lot nicer UI than what's already there in release management. You can see we've got run on deployment group as one stage, and then you've got run on Oh, that's two stages. Run on deployment groups. You can also add run on the agent or run agentless. So there's different phases you can add into the build. But I'm going to run these on the deployment group. And in the deployment group, I'm going to run it on my UAT deployment group, which I'll show you in a sec. And I'm going to pick up all my web servers. So if I quickly show you that, this is my UAT deployment group here. And you see you can actually see these are the physical machines I'm deploying to. Well, physical, that's the wrong word nowadays. These are the physical real VMs I'm deploying to. And I've got one database at the minute and a bunch of web servers. If I want to go in and, if I want to go in and add a new machine into that deployment group, then I can copy paste that big chunk of code, type it in an admin command shell and trust that we know what we're doing and we're not installing anything we shouldn't be, and you pull down the latest agent and install it onto the machine. If you want to do it on Ubuntu, whatever, Red Hat, then dead easy, yeah? So it's really simple to get the agent installed, and then it just appears in the machine pool here. So that's the important thing, is that the agents are pulling from the server. So again, this is the great thing about the cloud. Even if you're doing on-prem deployments, you can still have a cloud-based tool set to help you do those, and Azure can still help you. So yeah, there we go. So let's do a deployment for fun. So I'm going to come back to here, and I'm just going to go, pipeline. Yeah, let's just go out and have a quick look at it. Sorry, I better not edit it in case I break something. So if I come in and I'm going to kick off a release, and I'm just going to say, just do a release for me. And then very quickly, I have to be quick because it's super fast. There you go, click on logs. You see here, these are all my machines in my deployment group. And it's going to kick, once it finds a build agent, it's then going to start deploying these out to the machines. Normally it's really, really fast. And then you'll start seeing the actual deployment go along. And we'll see all the web servers get done first. And then we'll come back and see the build server get done. Well, that's being really slow. There we go. There's the web server going. I just wanted to show you. Right, off it goes. Boom, boom, boom. And you see it's picking off the machines and it's deploying. And you can see what's going on around here. If you wanted to look at logs, you can look at amalgamated logs. It's all awesome. But yeah, and then once that's finished, it'll then go do the SQL deployment step. But what if I wanted to do a rolling deployment? Well, that's super easy. You just come in here, go to edit, edit that. Sorry. And I'm going to come down and I'm going to say here, I want to only run on, say, 50% of my targets at the same time. Yeah? Hit save. Go back to releases. Just kick off a release. Cool. And then hit create. And that's going to go do that. While those things are releasing, there you go, it's already finished, which is cool. The old one's finished. So let's click on this one, actually, and watch it. Is it waiting? No, it's still waiting. I'll bring it up in a sec. Oh, no, it's working. Right, ready? Look, so now what it's doing is it's currently deploying to three agents. And then as soon as one finishes, it goes and gets the next agent. Now, what's happened in this instance is all three finished really quickly. But if one machine was particularly faster than another, you would notice it happening a bit better there. But yeah, there you go. So it's done three. It's doing the next three web tiers, and then it's going to go do the database tier. Three web tiers, and then database tier. There we go. There's a database tier going. Awesome. Right, let's look at something a bit more complicated now. Let's look at this one. So this is, I mentioned a great thing about deployment groups is you can dynamically provision. So if we go into the edit side here and look at our UAT phase, then what we've actually let's go back to the pipeline. So yeah, UAT phase. No, I'm gonna show you different. I'll show you a different one. Let's show you a different one. Releases. Show you this one. This is here's one I made earlier. Yeah, that's a proper environment. But notice when it comes in here, like in my perf test environment, what it's doing is on the agent itself, it's so actually on the thing controlling the builds, it's going to do use Azure Resource Group, and it's going to actually go and create me a bunch of instances of VMs, go instantiate me my perf test environment. It's then going to do the same deployment steps that we've talked about, the same group steps, and then it's going to come through and do a performance test and capture those results and store them, and then the environment goes away. So there we go. So that's pretty neat. I'm not kicking that off because it takes ages and costs a lot of money to run. Right. I'll also show you, we mentioned the VM scale sets. So I'll just quickly show you what a VM scale set thing looks like. Again, we're going to publish some blog posts around this stuff. They might be already gone up at 3 o'clock, but they'll be coming out and I'll tweet about them. But if we look at the scale set stuff, and all this is really super simple, because I mentioned all it's doing, remember there's an open source tool for creating VHDs called Packer. So I can just come in here, and in the new UI, there's actually a search box. Hang on, there we go. In the new UI, there's a search. Let's see if I can get it right there. There you go. Hee-hee. There's a neat little search task thing, which I really like. So run on agent, and then I can type in here Packer. And then there you go. I can do a build machine image. And that's one I've already got there, and then it deploys it out to VMSS. So there we go. And then finally, that'll do. Right. So we're getting 10 minutes. Right. So what's new? We've got all that. The deployment groups are brand new this week. VH scale set deployment, brand new. Then want to be able to integrate, you know, like we had a blade in the Azure portal for doing scale set-based continuous deployment. Want to be able to do that. The Azure Key Vault stuff was hoping to, that's coming in the next sprint or two. So really good integration into Azure Key Vault for storing your secrets and things. And then, yeah, that's that good. And then finally, I just wanted to quickly show you some stuff around containers. Maria already demoed this part in the keynote demo, so I'll not dig into it too much. But let's do the container one. And then again, I'm just using Kubernetes again because I know how to use Kubernetes. That's the main reason. But there's lots of different ways of doing it. And I'm going to come in here, and I had one fail. That was when there was a little identity outage in Azure earlier on. So that's why that failed. That was a bad thing. I was worried my demo was going to be a nightmare, and I was going to kick off a release. But what this does is, if I show you. It's very, very simple. Oh no, the simple bit there is just doing the Kubernetes stuff, because all it's doing is pushing the Kubernetes YAML configuration files. You don't need, that's not actually that interesting. What's more interesting is probably the release definition, the build definition. And then if I quickly show you here, ba-ba-bum. So yeah, doing .NET Core stuff, and then I build an image. So these Docker tasks, again, are brand new. So we've got really good Docker integration in there. There's good Chef integration as well, has just arrived. So yeah, all pretty cool. And then what that does is it just builds an image. And because we've selected Azure Container Registry, if we just had a regular container registry, which is what actually I think Maria showed, then it you can do it onto a network share or whatever. But we're using the Azure Container Registry, and then you point it and tell it which registry you want to use, and then what your Docker file is and what the name of the image is. And then that's where I push it. And then all I do then is just copy my Kubernetes configuration into my build drop, and then I use that to deploy it. So super simple. Right. So, a bunch of stuff that's coming in the container support. It's fair to say the container support's brand new. You know, just added the Docker tasks. We're going to be doing a bunch of improvements there. We also mentioned earlier on about doing continuous deployment in IntelliJ and VS Code. So that's kind of some of the stuff that's coming up. Speaking of coming up, as we're looking at sort of the trends in continuous deployment and continuous delivery, continuous integration, the container-based deployment is obviously something we need to do a lot of work on. So that's what we're going to be doing. We're trying to make the experiences lightweight, simple, clean, as you've seen. We want to make it so it's pluggable, composable. So if you don't use VSTS, if you use GitHub, great. If you use Bitbucket, great. It all should all still work as long as you're deploying to Azure, you know, that's all we care about. So yeah, let's make it as easy as we can. And also, the main one, you know, you've got configuration as code. So, you know, PowerShell, DSG, Azure Resource Manager, ARM templates, and Chef and Puppet, all those sorts of things. It's all fairly configuration as code. And what we need is pipelines as code. That's one of the, you know, I was doing GUIs. Like, DevOps guys, you know, don't like GUIs, do we? We like scripts, and we like being able to make sure everything's scriptable and repeatable. So we've got all this configuration as code stuff, so we're going to do pipelines as code. And here's a preview of what Pipelines as Code is going to be looking like. And it's YAML. Yeah, oh, we've got a clap. Go on, you can clap that. Yeah, there we go. Well, maybe not. Thank you. So the best thing is, I mean, so I think if you're using AppVeyor, you're kind of used to an AppVeyor YAML. But the thing with this is it's using the same extensibility model that's already in VSTS build, that's just a JSON file that kind of stores that stuff. So the parameters are all stored in a YAML file. And then you can pass your inputs into the different tasks. And even if they're, you know, off-the-shelf extensions, even if the extensions that you've built, those still come in as variables. So it's a first-class experience for all extensions and everything. If it uses Mustache, which is a templating engine, so it open source again, so that gives it parameterization, which I mentioned earlier, and templating, so you can extend. So you can have a one build definition which extends another. So if you wanted to have a default build pipeline for your organization or deployment pipeline with logging and tracing in that you need in your org, you can do that. And then have that as what everybody extends. And somebody has written, been involved with 6 books around this stuff. We always say if you've written 1 book, you're probably clever. If you've written 2, you're definitely an idiot. So I don't know what 6 makes you. But when I was doing that, trying to do screenshots of things and trying to explain people how to do builds is a nightmare. Now I can just check a YAML file into a GitHub repo and I'm sorted. And, you know, it's a lot easier to type in. And they scale from obviously very simple to very complicated. If you want to, it's coming up now. They're working on it. It's all obviously open source. This is the new Microsoft. So if you go over to the design notes, you too can have a look at the pipeline as code spec and, you know, see what you think and raise issues, do, you know, pull requests. It's all getting developed as we speak. Right. So in summary, I'm on time. This is remarkable. Automate your deployments, please, if you're not doing already. The other 50% of people that didn't have your hands up and the entire overflow room, they obviously didn't have their hands up either. You want to get your deployments automated. You want to spring into DevOps. And then we want to make sure that when we're building stuff for Azure, that it's always composable. It's, you can pick and choose the best component for you. But have a very simple integrated solution that also works with all the open source tools out there. The end-to-end pipeline support needs to be very rich in the backing service, which is VSTS. And if you don't care, if you never use that, that's fine. But if you want to go in and dig into it, then you can. And you also want the ability to, therefore, grow with your application as you get more complicated. Any app, any developer, any platform. Hope we saw that today. OK, that's about it. I'm going to wrap up now. If anyone has got any questions, we'll switch the recording off, come up and have a chat. Rupesh, if you're going to put your hand up, Rupesh, he's from the team as well. So if you want to ask any questions, ask us both. We'll come up to the stage. Email martinwu@microsoft.com. Follow me on Twitter, and I'll send out all the links. Thank you very much for your time. Have a good build.